I'm President Barack Obama. And I, too, want to slow jam the noose.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians this week, hosted by Chris Spengel, Chris Galt, and Creighton Harrington. How are you guys this week?
Pretty great. How are you, Spengel?
Pretty good. Hold on, let me get the mics right. Can you speak up?
Pretty good.
You do that every week. So this week we're going to talk a little bit about
slow jamming with the intro.
Slow jamming with the intro, exactly. A little Mr. Barry White, you're my first, my last, my everything for us to kick off this week as we talk about Barack Obama slow jamming the news. And that's really the first topic this week. And to get it set up, we're actually going to play the part of the bit with Fallon and let you hear a little bit of it. So in case you didn't take the time to watch the video, you'll have at least heard it. So here is Barack Obama on Jimmy Fallon.
I'm President Barack Obama. And I, too, want to slow jam the noose. On July 1st of this year, the interest rates on Stanford student loans, the same loans that many of you used to help pay for college, are set to double. That means some hardworking students will be paying about $1,000 extra just to get their education. So I've called on Congress to prevent this from happening. What we said is simple. Now is not the time to make school more expensive for our young people.
Oh, yeah. You should listen to the president. Or as I like to call him, the Preezy of the United Steezy. Things are heating up inside Congress's chambers behind all those closed doors. So the president made a few discreet calls across the aisle. He said, hey, let's get together on this one. Without an affordable Stafford loan, where can a student turn? The Pell Grant is a beautiful thing, but with college getting more expensive, is it enough by itself to satisfy all your collegiate needs? Oh, hell no.
If Congress doesn't act, it's the students who play. The right and left should join on this like Kim and Kanye.
Now, there's some in Congress who disagree. They say keeping the interest rate low isn't the way to help our students. They say we should be doing everything we can to pay down the national debt. Well, so long as it doesn't include taxing billionaires. But their position is that students just have to make this rate increase work. Frankly, I don't buy it.
The Barackness monster ain't buying it. We all know our legislative body is in the House tossing and turning late into the night. But still, Republicans disagree and could even filibuster. But if they do, the president said they're gonna feel it, Buster.
The GOP is steady saying no, no, no. They should find something new to do like Tim Tebow.
The reason it's so important to keep down costs is so we keep college affordable.
And the president knows his stuff, y'all. That's why they call him the POTUS, which means person on top. What is it?
Jimmy, POTUS stands for President of the United States.
He's the POTUS with the most stuff.
Let's keep the rates down on college loans.
Stop the loan you say may be your own.
Yeah. Let's get it together and make our lives better. Cause a college degree is more than a few letters. If college goes right, we'll have financial blues.
And that is how we slow jam the news.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so Chris and Creighton, which is more offensive, delegitimizing the presidency or legitimizing Jimmy Fallon? Well, to you, Chris Gold.
Legitimizing Jimmy Fallon.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that Jimmy Fallon is the reason the president has become delegitimized. I think he did that himself back in 2008. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't really have a problem with Jimmy Fallon. So, I mean, he's not as good as Conan, but I mean, he's not.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel reigns supreme in late night for me personally, and I like Craig Ferguson. Yeah,
but
too.
I mean, I think we are the generation that saw The Man Show and actually watched it. So Jimmy Kimmel's like always going to hold some respect for me.
I was just a young boy of 13 in my basement watching Comedy Central the first night The Man Show aired, and my life has never been the same.
So, I still say Ziggy Zaggy whenever I drink beer real fast.
So, do you guys have a problem with the President of the United States going on a show like this and participating in a comedy bit, essentially, to get his message out?
I actually think it was a really good idea by the President. I think it's brilliant. People don't watch the State of the Union. Normal people don't watch State of the Union. They watch Jimmy Fallon.
Right.
So he got to go on there. And during that song, he gave like three little tiny speeches, and Jimmy made it funny, and people enjoyed it and watched it. And I mean, there were already 2.5 million views in 2 days on YouTube. So
right.
Or less than 2 days.
I mean, I don't really see how he's doing anything that other presidents haven't. I mean, it was the biggest, greatest political move in the world when Bill Clinton played sax on Arsenio Hall.
Right.
I mean, it's whatever. I don't care. He's a president. I think he's a terrible president, and he got delegitimate when he said he's going to pass all these laws. Okay.
I don't know. I want to agree with you guys, but there is also something like I'm so bipolar on this because on the one hand, my libertarian streak says he's not a figure that should be worshipped. The president shouldn't be held to really a higher standard than a congressional member, and yet we worship the presidency for some reason. But then another part of me says, like, why would you go on Jimmy Fallon and participate in this? I mean,
I don't know. Some of my favorite things about the 2012 election this year were when Ron Paul got to be on Leno, Colbert, and Jon Stewart.
Right.
I mean, I don't see how that's any different. He could be president someday, so. I mean, why do you think the President Obama is different than?
I don't know. If it's a sit down interview, then that's one thing. But this was like some sort of lame comedy bit that isn't really funny. I mean, the only funny part was when Barack Obama dropped the mic at the end. I didn't realize he was dropping the mic, and then Jimmy Fallon was like, "Just drop my $500 microphone on the ground." Oh well, you're the president.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But
did you think it was funny, Creighton?
The only parts I thought was funny was when Jimmy Fallon and the band would come in and do their thing. I mean,
I thought it was pretty funny.
Just because Obama's slow jamming, I guess the whole concept that the president's doing this, I mean, I guess that I didn't think his stuff was funny, but when Jimmy Fallon would come in and be like, yeah.
Yeah, but President,
that was pretty funny.
Presidizi of the United Steezy, like how old is that joke? Like 25 years? But that was the only sort of the most notable thing. I don't know.
You're the only one that would know if it's 25 years old or not.
We're not 25 yet. So I didn't know that.
I hate you guys. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess let us know on our Facebook page. Go to wearelibertarians.com to get to the Facebook page. Let us know if you have a problem with it. I don't know. I could go either way. I see your argument that this is the 21st century and you've got to reach out to a different crowd of people. He's losing the millennial vote of everyone who's in this room is in the millennial generation. He's losing it rapidly. It's like down by 18%. And he's got to do something if he wants to get reelected, he's got to bring that segment of the population back. And you're not going to do that by going on Meet the Press or Face the Nation.
I was listening to Rush the other day. Actually, it was probably yesterday. And no, not the band, the talk show. And he goes, well, I say that because we were talking about Rush earlier. I just didn't want any confusion.
Neil Peart's the greatest drummer ever. But, don't you say anything bad about Neil Peart.
But Limbaugh made the comment that the president did this because he needed to get the youth vote because they're leaving rapidly for the Republican Party and all this. And I was just thinking, I was like, Rush, do you think those people are going to Mitt Romney's part of the Republican Party? Or who do you think in the Republican Party is getting all these youth votes right now?
You know what song I really love, kids? America the Beautiful. For the mountains and the prairies. Like, how square could Mitt Romney be?
I mean, He's Mitt Romney.
Barack Obama definitely has the cool factor, but it sort of is weird that the coolest candidate in the entire the one that has wrapped up the youth vote is like an 80-year-old guy who holds up his when he says five, he holds up his hand weird. They're like, ah, it's the five call. Like, I've got 11-8-5 departments of government. Ah. Like, it says something that, you know, our generation, I think, is a little bit more tuned into policy and, you know, probably way more than the boomers and the traditional generation that the so-called greatest generation gives us.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is, I mean, I can only speak as to why I like Ron Paul. And everybody has their own reasons. But for me, it's like I look at things, I tend to, you know, look at these things a little logically. I'm like Mr. Spock. And it's just like you're raised with this, you know, mantra, at least I was, from, you know, my parents and my teachers that, you know, the whole American dream and blah, 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 and all this crap. And then you realize how everything they do is the antithesis of everything you were told when you were young. And
right.
The American dream is to go blow up random cities in Afghanistan and to tax to death and socialize and all this kind of stuff. And both parties are just along for the ride. Then you have this guy come along and say that these people are stupid and this is what we're supposed to do and this is what the Constitution says. And he's just like, yeah, that's pretty logical. That kind of sounds a little bit more like what I pictured in my head when they told me about, you know, the land of the free. And that's why I'm drawn to him. It's just like he doesn't beat around the bush.
He's honest. What about you, Gal? Why do you think that our generation is leaving Barack Obama for 70? How old is he? 76?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why
do you think they're leaving Barack Obama for Ron Paul?
Because he's 76 and he's never changed in 76 years.
Right.
I mean, I can't, like Creighton said, I can't speak for everybody, but I guess I like him. I liked him since the day I met him in 2009.
Name
when
dropper.
I was in his office. It's a congressional office, and he walked in, and it was like the president walking into the room. Like, I stood up, and I don't know.
That's like the nerdiest thing that's ever been said on the show.
That 40-minute conversation I had two-on-one with Ron Paul was like the highlight of my entire, all the way, my life up to high school. So I guess it was more of a personal thing of why I started to like him, and that's what brought me into libertarianism itself. So then I just got He forced me to become educated about policy.
I mean, that's one thing there's something about the guy that just, like, when you hear him talk and you hear him talk about stuff, it's just like, you want to go learn stuff. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the thing that I like about Ron Paul is his looks. He's the handsomest candidate. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think, really, Ron...
Failed joke.
Thank you. Let's just all stop here and insert a wren shot. Moment of silence for that joke to be buried. No, I think Ron Paul, I think you're right. With Barack Obama, when a candidate stands up and says, the seas are going to stop rising when I'm president, I'm going to fix health care, you're going to get $3 a gallon less for gas. I mean, those are empty promises. And I think a lot of times the majority of politicians – 90% of politicians just are full of hot air. You know, whenever you see a politician give an interview, it's sort of like when a sports figure gives an interview after a big game. Like, yeah, the game is great, everything. You know, they're not saying anything about the game that they're actually thinking. They're not giving away any kind of strategy. They're not giving away any kind of substance. And so you just sort of stop listening to them. And Ron Paul just has that attitude that I'm just going to say the truth. I'm going to be unashamed of freedom. And I'm going to say what I believe. And if people punish me for that, then I don't really care. And I think that really is why a lot of independents like him, is because he just doesn't he doesn't say what you want him, what he thinks you want to hear. He says what he believes.
And he breaks this, you know, bipartisan mindset that we've had for a long time. I mean, there have been strides in the past. I mean, there have been, you know, upsurges of like a third party, like what Ross Perot or whatever. But you know, when it comes to like what matters, the issues and the philosophy, he just straight up points out and throws it in both parties' face how much they are similar. and how much they really fight for the same things. They just want they're fighting over who should control the big government. None of them really want to shrink it.
People in our generation are noticing that there's many problems with the government, and when they look at those problems right now, a lot of it's economic problems. And Ron Paul, like Time called him the prophet because he predicted half of those problems.
And that's always sort of why
I'd say all of them.
That's why I don't think libertarians should turn their back on Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, because a lot of those people have issues with the government, but their solution is more government. And right. I think if they see a different way, then, you know, if we can go in there and talk with them and influence them a little bit, they'll see it our way. And I think that's a big thing about libertarianism that people are attracted to. People are naturally attracted to novelty, something that's different. And so if it's a joke, you laugh harder at a joke where you would have never thought of the premise. You know, with libertarianism, you would have never thought that there is a political belief system like libertarianism. Like, oh, you mean the government shouldn't be my first instinct? Wow, that's weird. You know, and I think that's part of Ron Paul's attraction too, you know, and less with Barack Obama's. I mean, so is there any chance that you guys see – well, you guys are around – our peers more than I am, obviously, because you're on a college campus. Do you see is the youth vote mobilizing more for Barack Obama? What is sort of the vibe about Barack Obama on campus?
Not our campus. I don't see it.
At IUPUI, to be clear.
The Democrats have met one time this whole year.
The most I've seen is, when you're in Kavanaugh Hall, to anyone who's ever been to IUPUI, and if you know where Kavanaugh Hall is at, it's just a liberal arts building, and then
just call it the center of campus.
It's the ground zero of campus, right
next to the entrance of a tunnel. So that's their perception of a lot of traffic. There is a table with two signs that say Hope or Change 2012, and two people sitting there, and you know that's the Obama presence in our campus, just like one random building next to a door with one table and two people, you know. And I mean, as far as us, I mean, and we're not in our official capacities Ron Paul supporters, but I mean, the
Ron Paul group itself had the entire indie Ron Paul meetup there, and they had the delegate convention there, or not convention, but to get people ready to be delegates for Ron Paul, filled up the entire Lilly Auditorium, which is like 150 seats.
Yeah.
I mean, not all were students, but still, that's a lot more than anything Obama's been going on campus.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to be, you know, blinded by the fact that all we do is walk by the table, we don't talk to them and go to their other stuff. But for the most part, it just seems like, you know, the Ron Paul-leaning, libertarian-leaning groups, people on campus have been a little bit more active. And If that is an accurate translator to, you know, they're going to be active in primaries and in general, then I'd say that as far as IUPUI is concerned, Ron Paul is pretty safe.
I think Obama's campaign is a huge lesson for Ron Paul and his followers as well. And let me make it clear, I do like Ron Paul. I get this all the time. I'm like, oh, you got to be nicer to Ron Paul. Like, I like Ron Paul. I'm here because of Ron Paul, so leave me alone and quit emailing me about it. I like him, all right? Let's get that straight. But when Barack Obama's supporters, even more than Obama, when his supporters started over-promising, and that was a huge mistake on Barack Obama's point because he knows how politics works. He was in Washington, D.C. for 3.5 years before he became president. You know, Ron Paul can't fix everything in one term. And that's one of the problems, you know, for Ron Paul is that if he were to get elected president, he'd have to become the most tyrannical president of all time, issuing multiple executive orders to try and build a libertarian society right away. You know, so there has to, you know, Barack Obama's supporters didn't allow him enough room to fix everything because they demanded it all right away, you know. And Ron Paul supporters and libertarians in general have to understand is that we've come to this point of a massive federal government over the course of 100 years, and it's going to take 100 years to unwind it. And so that's one of the things that I really worry about with a lot of the college Ron Paul kids is they don't have the length of time that, you know, I have where you see that things move slowly. That's how the government was designed. You can't just flip a light switch and make everything right. a libertarian society.
When Ron Paul takes office in 2013, I think you're right, and some people will be he's just smiling at me because I said that.
Yeah.
Some people will be frustrated by him not doing things fast and quickly or whatever, but I think it's a long-term battle, and by having a libertarian president, there's going to be an uprising of I guess he'd be a Republican president, but you know what I mean. There'll be an uprising of new congressmen, new senators, new everything that'll be on his side. It'd be a future battle. It wouldn't have to all happen in his term.
And I mean, he's been pretty clear what he plans to do. I mean, as far as his budget, I know that it's unlikely that a lot of that will get passed through Congress, but he does have control over one portion, and that's the military. And he's been pretty clear what he's going to do there, and I think that'll make an impact if he gets elected and does that, does a lot of what he said he's going to do with the military. I think he'll make a pretty substantial impact on a lot of things. And I think to a large extent, a Ron Paul victory says a lot about more where the people of America stand than it does about, you know, the possibility of, you know, how congressmen will be able to pass laws and stuff. I mean, and even says specifically more about the Republican Party, because I think this is kind of a defining election, I think, for the Republican Party in the future, because it's so disproportionate, the amount of youth people that support like Ron Paul's style ideas versus, you know, Mitt Romney style ideas. And I think if the Republican Party continues to do what it's doing and be unabashedly, you know, aggressive against these Ron Paul factions, then they're going to kill themselves. The Republican Party will die because it's just not adjusting to changing, you know, base opinion. And I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Ron Paul's going to be Ron Paul's perspective, his philosophy, and his type of governing, or his beliefs on government, that is kind of pretty much, you can say, the future of, you know, at least the Republican Party, if they adjust to it. And if they don't, then I'd see the Republican Party dying.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that in like, oh, it hasn't happened since the Whigs back in the 1800s, but it's not impossible, and it's almost happened plenty of times, and I see that as just like, it would just tear it apart. And
big government neoconservatism and social conservatism, that in 30 years is going to be a fringe element in our politics, I think. You know, I think that, you know, even people like myself who are evangelical Christians, I'm a libertarian. I don't want to mix, you know, politics and religion at all. You know, it's like Chad Reed said the other day, that mixing manure and ice cream, it doesn't
affect the manure, but it
sure does mess up the ice cream, yeah. You know? And I think that our generation is much more tolerant of a lot of things. And, you know, we choose to live our lives certain ways, and we just don't want to tell other people how to live their lives. And I think you're right. I think that the ruling element of the Republican Party is about to be marginalized in a significant way, and they don't know it yet. But it's coming.
And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're still – I mean, it doesn't seem like it to us, to at least the young people, because, you know, I was born in 1990. The Cold War ended in what, 91? Officially, it ended in 91.
God, I was in first grade.
So, I mean, for pretty much my whole life, I've never lived through a Cold War style – like America, and a lot of the people at the heads of these parties did, and I see that as a strong reason why this mentality of, you know, big government, all these things that we did throughout the 20th century, which was in part because that's what we felt we had to do to beat the Soviets. I feel like that dies hard. I mean, they've never experienced any other type of government in their lives.
I was arguing with somebody about like F-18 fighter jets the other day. Well, we can't cancel that contract. That's an important plane for our military. It's like, frankly, we use drones now. We don't use F-18 fighter jets.
They upped the drone campaign for Yemen the other day.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Wonderful. All right. Well, add another battlefront to the chart.
Hope and change.
Yeah. I mean, so the nature of warfare is changing dramatically, and, you know, we still have that mindset. You know, and it's funny to me because does it concern you guys at all that people that are in middle school right now have no idea what it's like to live without the TSA? You know, they have no concept of what 9/11 even was. And that kind of blows my mind, because I'm just like, how could you not know what 9/11 was? I mean, I was a senior in high school, so it was like...
I was in fifth grade.
Right. I turned 18 on September 9th. I signed up for Selective Service on September 10th, and then September 11th happened, and I was like, oh, crap. So
can I take it back?
Yeah.
Please.
So does it concern you that the generation behind ours might be a little too comfortable with a police state with some of the things that we've built through 9/11?
Well,
after?
Know. Our generation didn't have... Before Ron Paul didn't have a leader either, and now they have us. So I'm not concerned about it.
I don't know. I'd be concerned if they kind of they're indifferent to it. But some of the stuff is getting to the point where you can't be indifferent. You know it's wrong, regardless of you've always experienced in your life.
Yeah.
You know it's wrong, and I feel like we're getting to that point where even if they have grown up in this kind of police state, they're like, yeah, this is pretty effed up.
There was a young girl who had a debilitating disease. I forget the disease, but she was in New Jersey and she was patted down. It was a horrifying thing. And then you've got another congressman this week was felt up. Last week it was Bar Raffaelli. I mean, every single week there is some sort of high profile story about the TSA, and I'm really hoping that it starts to ratchet up and we end this as soon as possible.
I mean, and they haven't caught a single terrorist.
2013.
I just
right.
They've
caught a lot.
A year left.
I don't want to go on a rant about the TSA.
They've caught a lot of pocket knives. They've caught a lot of bottle of shampoo.
A year from now, we can talk about the TSA if it's still here, but it won't be.
They are the perfect. They are the best examples of 100% or 2020 hindsight.
All right.
It's like, oh, they tried to blow up a bomb with some Gatorade bottles. No more liquids.
Right.
Like, it didn't work the first time, and then we try and stop it, and then oh, they put their bomb in their shoe. Take your shoes off. Oh, they put their bomb in the underwear. All right, scan this.
Yeah.
It's like all they got to do is find somewhere else to put the bomb, and then you.
Yeah, they harassed the girl with cerebral palsy yesterday.
That's who I was talking
about.
Yeah, it's a poor 7-year-old girl. So let's get to it, Mr. Man, because you're over there. Galt is taunting me with Ron Paul.
Yeah,
here.
Well,
like,
that's what I was going
to
say. We brought up Ron Paul, but we didn't talk about why he's going
to
win.
Because now that Newt Gingrich has dropped out, although Newt announced that he'd be dropping out on Tuesday, like, just get it over with.
And he would be endorsing Mitt Romney. Like,
right.
He's...
What's the point of the press conference now?
Newt Gingrich, the whole campaign trail only talked about how bad Mitt Romney was.
I'm sure The Onion will show up to cover it. But how do you... The money is lining up behind Barack Obama. The media is lining up behind Barack Obama.
Good.
You know, leadership is lining up behind Barack Obama. You guys have been involved in politics for the last couple of years. You sort of know how momentum and how organizations work from the inside. You really think that Ron Paul can still win the nomination, Chris Galt?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Numbers are there.
Oh, you two are cute. And, all right, argue it to me. Explain
I would
it to
say,
me.
Okay, I would say one of the things that you're right about, he's lacking a little bit of money. He did
Although
raise $2.5 million last month.
He is in the black.
He still raised $2.5 million last month, and the media says that he's been out of it for a while.
Well, he didn't even win a primary, did he?
But having the most money, normally people always cite that having the most money wins in politics. But, I mean, I ran Ed Coleman's campaign and we had the most money and we didn't win.
Listen, don't rub it in.
I'm just saying, like, it's not always about the most money. So Creighton was throwing his hands up in the air like he wanted to talk. So I was going to stop here.
Because he didn't win a single primary. I mean, please tell me that by primary you mean he didn't win a single popular vote.
By the time you get to the August convention 3 months from now, there is going to be no discussion of Ron Paul and the Republican Party at all, except for his base of 15% to 18%.
That's not true at all.
It will be.
It
mark
be
my
true
words.
At all. It won't be because out of Iowa, just recently we found out of Iowa, he has first as among delegates, 17 out of 28? You just said it a minute ago.
Delegates sounds about right.
But again, 17. You guys get these numbers from the Ron Paul campaign.
No, we don't.
Yes,
no,
you do.
We don't. We got these numbers straight from the state GOP.
Fox News. Fox News.
You guys.
Fox News. two times. One on Brett Baer and then in just a passing reference the other day said that it looks like Ron Paul's going to win Iowa. Fox News reporter said that.
The one that was run in January?
Well,
or is there
Rachel
like
Maddow
sec-
said it 2 days ago.
Rachel Maddow had a whole freaking segment
Rachel
on
Maddow
it.
Said that Ron Paul won Iowa.
So is
the
there
delegates
like,
are out and he won.
So how does that work? Because I haven't followed that.
You don't win the Republican nomination by winning a popular vote in the same way you
That's
don't win the
point.
General
they don't,
election.
The reason the
George Bush didn't win the popular vote and he's still president. He was still president.
Yeah, but no. But the thing is, the reason that you don't win the popular vote when the
it's
Republican
That's
primary,
a very good argument, Chris Galt, but it's completely not applicable here.
It is.
It's not applicable as far as the delegate apportionment.
On Mike.
But.
There you go.
But. I mean, I think we all understand why it's what Ron Paul's what's so beautiful about it is what Ron Paul's doing is he's taking the corrupt system that the Republican Party, you know, leadership heavyweight juggernauts have created throughout the 20th century to make it so that the party players at the top get to really pick who is the person that emerges with the.
But it's not the party players at the top. It's the primary voters. I mean, the primary
it's
voters
not.
Are overwhelmingly
no, it's
saying
not,
that
though.
They would
that's
rather
not
have
how
Mitt
it's
Romney.
Set up. They did not set it up
what
that
is
way.
A do you
this
know
is,
what a delegate
this
is,
my beef.
Spangle?
This is my
do you know
beef
what a delegate
guys.
Is?
Hold on. I would love for Ron Paul to be the presidential nominee.
Well, it's
nominee.
Happen.
That
be
would
happy.
Be fantastic.
Smile, Spangle.
But we need to start planning ahead, okay?
Hope and
we
change.
Need to start... We need to stop wishing and hoping and praying and instead get serious about what we're going to do when and if he does not win the nomination.
How many elections
instead
are there
of,
in next year, Spangle?
Instead of arguing about, well, you can build, grassroots take a hell of
right.
a long time to build.
So you can focus
you know
on this year's elections.
I don't think anyone's
and next year, focus on grassroots.
Yes,
by promising people that your
no,
favorite nominee is going
anything.
To get the nomination?
I'm not promising anything.
You asked us if we think he can win, and I think
okay.
we both said
yes.
we think he can win. That doesn't mean we're excluding any effort to keep the you know grassroots movement alive, but what we are saying is just because he didn't win the popular vote in Iowa doesn't mean that he won't get the delegates, which are the only ones that actually picked the Republican nominee.
It's not a won't
because
anymore.
He did. He got 17 out of the 28,
and,
I believe.
And Paul said on the news, he used to say, "When the dust settles." In Minnesota was the state he was talking about. Mm-hmm. I'll have the most delegates.
And he does.
And
he
did.
Has 20 out of the 24 right now, and 13 more get apportioned at the state convention, and he's probably going to get all those too. Washington, he took Washington State, he got a ton of delegates.
So are you guys hoping
Colorado,
that on the,
he got a ton of delegates.
On the second ballot he can beat Mitt Romney at the convention on the second ballot?
It depends. It depends.
Yeah, more I mean, like
8. Like the 8th ballot.
8th ballot.
Right.
10th ballot. I don't know. It'll be really long.
I just don't think that it's wise for us to sit here and
I don't think it's wise to dismiss someone that has a chance to be president of the United States.
But at this point, it really doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Well,
we've got 3 more months.
Spangle, you haven't even looked at the
you've
numbers.
You've worked in politics for 2 years. You know how
and
long...
It's all, politics is all numbers. It's a numbers game.
You know how long 3 months is. There are multiple primaries between now and
Mike
then.
Mike Rothfeld always told us, it's numbers. You break it down. There's 3% of the population that vote for a candidate and actually look at who they're voting for.
And even
and
just
that's
said, now that Newt Gingrich
is out... It's numbers.
Out,
it's all numbers.
What incentive do all of the fervent Romney supporters, if they exist anywhere, do they have to go out and vote for Romney? Why his turnout, if anything,
they
is going to go down
over.
Now that Newt
yeah.
Gingrich dropped out.
We talk all the time about how Ron Paul supporters are mistreated in the Republican Party, how libertarians are mistreated in the Republican Party. And those people make up the delegates that vote for Rick Santorum, for Herman Cain, for Newt Gingrich. What makes you think that those people are going to choose Ron Paul?
Well,
they think
they're
he's
not.
A heretic.
They're just not
going
to go vote. Think about it.
The
Indiana primary is in less than 2 weeks.
At the national convention.
The Indiana primary is in less than 2 weeks.
The national delegate. The national convention in Tampa, delegates are the ones that vote. The people who become the delegates is not really 100% dependent upon who wins the popular vote at the primary.
I understand
and
that.
Some
I
of them
understand
are.
That.
Some of them
and
are.
But what makes
some
you
of
think
them.
That
some
on,
of them are.
On the second ballot that they're going to vote for Ron Paul over Mitt Romney? Because those people don't think Ron Paul is the best choice to beat Barack
Obama.
They think it's Mitt Romney.
Because all the
they're wrong.
I know they're wrong,
listen,
but that doesn't
listen,
mean that they're not going to vote wrongly.
Republicans
have voted wrongly for 100 years.
Listen, just because one delegate, Delegate X, has to vote mm-hmm. for Romney because he's the delegate that's been picked to be one of the – has to vote for Romney people because Romney won so many of the popular vote. Even if that delegate has to vote for Romney, it doesn't mean it can't be a Ron Paul supporter. It sounds like you're implying that the people who are going to be the ones that have to vote for Romney are going to be the ones that like Romney. And that's not how it's working.
If
Ron
you
Paul's
win,
nothing
the,
says you're settling
Ron Paul
like
is getting
Mitt
the,
Romney.
Ron Paul is putting his people into those spots. That way, when they don't have to vote for Romney, they vote for Ron.
If you win – if you are a delegate, a Republican delegate from Indiana, you are legally bound to vote for Mitt Romney in Tampa. Okay.
Yes.
Every round, period. You have to vote the way that the body.
I'm pretty
of primary
sure
voters,
only the first round is bound.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure only the first ballot is bound.
They also make sure that the people that they send to Tampa, meaning the state Republican Central Committee, they're not going to be Ron Paul
supporters.
Well, that's
fine, but if there's 100 Ron Paul supporters at
the
state convention and there's 110 people,
I know.
They haven't been succeeding.
Okay.
The Ron Paul County, like Clark County, where Las Vegas is at, is completely taken over by Ron Paul supporters.
Iowa GOP.
The chair of the GOP is a Ron Paul supporter.
Here in Indiana.
They're beating the Republicans at their own game.
The Maine GOP now, too. Maine's turning Ron Paul.
Yeah,
their leadership.
Those are some heavy delegate counts for Maine and Iowa.
Listen, what the thing
one
is,
county
is the Republican
in
Party.
Nevada.
The Republican Party obviously set up this system so that it makes people think they're voting for the Republican ticket, but what they're really doing is nothing. And the party itself picks who's going to the ticket. What Ron Paul said is, "Well, screw the popular vote crap. I'll do the party crap, and I'll get to become on the ticket."
And I respect
because I know how
that,
the system works.
But the Libertarian movement needs to start thinking about a Plan B and stop attacking people who are suggesting that maybe we now have a Plan B in place if he doesn't get the nomination, instead of going, well, I really think the Republicans have learned their lesson and they're going to do
why
right
can't
by
Plan B
Ron
start
Paul.
In September is all I'm saying,
because September is so late, you
and that's when the nominee is found out. Okay. So it's the how is it late for Libertarians but not late for
I
Republicans?
Cannot wait until September's We Are Libertarians.
Hey, I'm
episodes,
not saying.
Episodes 50.
Yeah, I can't either, because then I get to shove it in
awesome.
Your face.
Let me put it on record. I am not saying that Ron Paul is a shoo-in. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that the idea that Mitt Romney has this locked and in the bag is false, and it's premature. And to say that we need to quit worrying about Ron Paul getting elected is probably the exact reason why everyone's saying that Mitt Romney is the one who's got it. CNN doesn't even put Ron Paul
why,
on
why
their
focus,
little
why
counts.
Focus on Ron Paul? Why not focus on local Republican candidates or local Libertarian candidates that could get elected to Congress to make a bigger difference than you'd have?
Well, that depends on your area. I mean, I'd say in Indiana.
So much money and attention is diverted to the Ron Paul campaign, it isn't even funny. It's crippling local Libertarian-minded candidates. Because
it's
so much
growing the entire movement. Though.
So, yeah, but at this point, what is the wiser investment? Is it in a presidential candidate campaign that has already selected delegates and the delegate selection process is mostly ended?
Well, what are the two largest states in the delegate process?
Iowa,
Texas,
Minnesota,
and
Colorado,
Texas,
Washington.
And California.
And neither of them have went yet. And one of them is Ron Paul's home state.
And
California is...
California is, if it's an open primary, then that is going to be an interesting primary day.
California has something called Top 2, which is maybe the worst designed primary system of all time. So, where basically they throw everybody into a pot, and then you vote for the top two. I don't know if that applies to presidential politics. I'm sure it does.
Well,
so.
What I'm saying is that if you can be a Democrat and vote in the Republican primary in California, that will be interesting, because I think Ron Paul can pull a lot of those L.A. and San Francisco people into voting for him in the Republican
Definitely.
Primary.
Definitely. And there's more independents in California than any other state.
But
that will be interesting.
Don't you see my point?
Well,
that,
I mean proportionally.
I see what you're trying
to
say.
Spending the next 3 months trying to fundraise for a presidential campaign that has about a 10% shot of winning the presidential
10% shot of becoming president of the United States?
Yes.
That's plenty enough for me.
Isn't that the magic number Libertarians have been going for decades?
That's double digits. That's more than Gary Johnson is polling.
Creighton.
No, I understand what you're trying to say.
But guess who you'll be voting? Guess who you'll be voting for in November? I promise you. I mean, listen, this is the thing that Ron Paul Republicans get wrong all the time. They sit here and they pick on Libertarians. You pick and pick and pick on
I'm
Libertarians.
I'm not picking on Libertarians.
And
I
then
love
you guys never win the primary, and then you end up voting for the Libertarian after you've picked
on. So why does that make you angry? We're going to vote for you anyway.
I'm not angry.
What you're trying to say is that we shouldn't put so much effort behind Ron Paul anymore because it might be a lost cause. And there's other
things.
But the thing is I would disagree that it is a lost cause. And I would also disagree that it's a absolute, zero-sum trade-off. I mean, more has been done for the Libertarian movement from a failed Ron Paul campaign that went up into the convention.
I'm not saying that it's been a waste of time up to this point. I'm not saying that it has not been valuable. That's not my argument at all, because as a person who sits here today, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was brought in by Ron Paul. I am saying that at this point, is our efforts and our and our focus in the libertarian movement better spent on supporting local campaigns versus a presidential campaign that is probably not going to win the convention.
If you try and split this movement, people are not going to like the Libertarian Party if they try and split this
movement. Not trying to split the movement at all. I'm saying where is our focus best spent?
Were you even on Facebook at all the week Gary Johnson announced? Because if you were, you would have saw a million Ron Paul supporters complaining,
right,
that Gary Johnson was stealing Ron Paul's movement. And although that's not true at all,
right,
if you wait until September and if Ron Paul leaves the convention and maybe he changed a couple platform things and did some good there,
right, compromises positions to
people
stay a Republican.
People need you, and they're going to come to you. People are going to come to Gary Johnson. Is the Libertarian Party of Indiana growing?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Is that because of Chad Reed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And is it because of Rupert?
Yes.
Is it because of Ron Paul?
Not immediately, no.
You don't think Ron Paul is helping grow the Libertarian Party of Indiana?
Immediately, right now, today, Ron Paul does not bring a lot of people into the party. Now, I will say 6 months from now, it will be totally different.
That's my point. Is more was done for the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian movement by Ron Paul's going. He went up to the convention in 2008 as well. He didn't drop out before the convention.
He dropped out in late June in 2008.
He did?
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, he dropped out in late June.
He did.
Oh. Well, anyway, regardless. He was
the last one to drop out.
More was done for his campaign, for the Libertarian Big L, Little L movement than, you know, they had been able to do for such a long
now,
time.
Let me clarify my argument again. I'm not saying that Ron Paul should drop out. He should go to the convention.
You're
okay?
saying we shouldn't spend our time and support him anymore.
I'm saying that the selection process as an individual libertarian is your time and money better spent at this point on a candidate who has already gone through the selection process, has already collected delegates, or is it better spent on somebody like Chad Reed, who desperately needs volunteers and money right now to get his campaign off the ground and will be on your ballot in November? Because Chad Reed needs a hell of a lot of help. Rupert needs a hell of a lot of help. And instead, we're getting a lot of people going, I'm supporting Ron Paul. Well, great. We'll see you in September and we'll appreciate your help then, but we need help now too. You know, that's my argument, is are we focusing on a candidate that has already had most of the delegates selected and already has a pretty decent amount of funding, or are we going to...
You're looking at things from Indiana's point of view, and in Indiana that has not happened yet. I'm going to be a delegate to the state convention, and that convention has not happened yet.
Right.
So, no, in Indiana, Ron Paul, it's not over. It's not like mm-hmm. in Iowa. If we were in Iowa right now, there would probably be people helping Chad Reed.
Sure. And I plan
But that's just because our primary is late. That's not because
June,
of Ron
after
Paul.
After the state convention in June, I expect a ton of Ron Paul Republicans to come home.
But you shouldn't advocate for anyone not doing those things for Ron Paul. He needs those delegates at the state convention in Indiana. He still needs that help.
My argument is this, is more, when he did his run in 2008, all of the stuff that was built for mm-hmm. that emerged happened after the campaign. So the way I look at it is the bigger, badder, better he is able to do at the convention in Tampa because of all the work that people do up until that point, the better he does there is the stronger the movement is after he drops out. And if we sacrifice in order to provide for – and that helps local candidates. I'm saying that helps the entire grassroots.
Functionally, after Indiana's primary, how many primaries are after Indiana's primary? Not that many, right?
May 5th, right?
I mean, by mid-May, pretty much he's running a message campaign. I mean, is he going to be able to win the presidency of the United States against Barack Obama? He's going to have to raise a tremendous amount of volunteers and money to build infrastructure. And
again,
Mitt Romney's already building that infrastructure, and Ron Paul can't compete.
The apportionment of delegates does not happen on primary day. It happens afterwards. That's why Ron Paul won in Iowa, because he stayed there and he kept fighting after primary day. So just because the primary happened doesn't mean that what matters, the delegates, is done. That's why he won Minnesota. It's because he knows how it works, and he kept fighting for it after primary day when people like Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney were going to Pennsylvania to fight over, you know, because Rick Santorum's from Pennsylvania. While they were doing all that crap, Ron Paul was stealing the party from them underneath their feet. And that's why he's so he can't just stop. Just because after the last primary is over doesn't mean all the delegates have been apportioned, and he needs all the delegates he can get, and that's what he's trying to do. I don't see why you're stopping at when the primary day happens. After that, okay, now we can focus on other things, because it's not over. That's just it's a beauty contest. It doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
Well, what I'm excited about, if we want to change gears a little bit,
yeah,
I'm excited for the Romney-Paul debate in Texas.
There's actually going to be a nationally debate between the two of them?
Nationally televised.
Excellent.
Romney hasn't confirmed he's going, but if he doesn't, it says right on the website of the Texas GOP, any candidates that don't come will be saying that they don't support Texas and that we will tell our Texans that. So he's going to have to go, and it's going to be one-on-one Paul Romney, nationally televised.
If it weren't so hot there, I would move to Texas in a heartbeat. I love the way they do. They're like, listen here, get your butt in Texas or else.
I would love to see Ron Paul v.
But
Romney.
That, I mean,
oh my God,
that,
that'd be beautiful.
That could make a difference in Texas, the Texas primary as well, that debate itself.
Because
we haven't had a debate in a while. We haven't had a debate since people started dropping out.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, oh my God, that would be glorious. That would be so glorious.
I can already see my email feed. Why do you hate Ron Paul? You can't believe you wish he'd never run. And I hope that you all listen to my clarifiers. I just am a person that works daily with candidates that are desperate for support and help. And, you know, look up the word Pyrrhic, a Pyrrhic victory, then think about it. So let's move on.
May 24th is the date of that primary.
Okay.
I mean, that debate.
So functionally, I mean, that's sort of why Ron Paul dropped out in June, I think, in 2008, is pretty much all the primaries, for the most part, are done
Texas
in around June.
Texas is done at the end of May.
Yeah, so
California, I think, is in June or it's in July.
Right.
It's definitely a J month.
Oh, Ron also got four. Ron got four delegates out of Rhode Island that have to vote for Ron, I believe.
Yeah, that convinces me. Four Rhode Island.
My point is that it was Mitt Romney, and Ron Paul got 24% Rhode Island. He didn't campaign there once.
Right.
And the other two got zero.
They said that Paul got the most delegates in Washington, too. He's got Washington, Iowa,
Colorado, Maine. He's doing
Nevada,
really well. Nevada, he's doing pretty good.
You guys haven't provided any solid math, though. You're just like, you're
wrong. Well, I told you that 17 out of 28 for Iowa, which makes him the winner. Minnesota has 20 out of 24, and he's probably going to get more at the stake eventually, which means he won Minnesota. Colorado, I don't know the specific numbers, but I know he won.
What's our email, Galt? WeAreLibertarians.com.
WeAreLibertarians@gmail.com.
All right. So if you have hard math if Chris Spangl is pissing you off and you're a Ron Paul supporter, a Ron Paul Republican, email that. Give us some facts, because these two have no facts
and
to back
CNN
up their
does
arguments.
Not. Well, I just told you some numbers
we
that
just
are real.
Told you facts.
But
you just
CNN
don't
and Fox
facts.
News delegate counts on their
fault.
Website do not count. I know for a while I was seeing them say that Ron had four delegates out of Iowa, which he had seven if you just went straight up by, you know, pure apportionment by percentage vote. So I don't know what the heck they're going off of, but they're all the major news sites are wrong.
I know. Damn mainstream media. Or if you agree with me and you think that at this point, what are we doing? You know, let him go to the convention. Cool. But as far as a grassroots movement, we need to start focusing on candidates that will be in the November elections. We are libertarians. One word, right?
Yep.
We are libertarians at gmail.com. So
I think you can help both Ron Paul and local candidates, by the way. And I do that. So I encourage people to do both. Helping local and
right.
national candidates.
I think in the process of voting for helping Ron Paul, you're helping both.
Yeah,
that's my point.
A vote for Ron Paul is a vote for
is for growing Ron Paul. Growing Ron Paul's campaign is growing the entire liberty movement for the future, including local candidates. Then there would be no takeover of Clark County GOP and Iowa State Chair GOP if it wasn't for Ron Paul's campaign.
If you have no idea who Chard Reed is, by the way, listen to the Easter egg at the end of this podcast, and I'm gonna put
oh,
in there.
It's gonna be great.
The best opening statement of any debate I've ever seen. It was. Epic.
Yeah.
And
did a great job in the debate.
Yeah. He's the libertarian candidate in the 5th congressional district in Indiana, and he just kills it. He's going to be, if we can make, he posted the video last night of his opening statement. If we can make him a viral sensation nationally, because I know we could, because it was that freaking good, that'd be awesome. Because Chard is an amazing candidate. All right, so moving on to our next topic, let's give the idiot of the week. And this week, the idiot of the week is...
Marco Rubio. Oh. For being Marco Rubio. as Galt eloquently said before we came in.
The only person that can flip-flop harder than Mitt Romney. I'm not going to run for VP. Oh, wait, I am.
I don't know. Marco Rubio, I mean, I could smell a rat when I saw him running in Florida. He's a Tea Party candidate. It's like, no, he's not.
Yeah. I pretty much look at almost every Republican like that. When there's one candidate in the congressional district primary 5 that Chard's running against, and his website is like Tea Party Central. It's like he looks like a libertarian. He's for sound money. He's got a Don't Tread on Me flag on there. But when he was in Washington before, he was basically just your typical big spending social conservative. And will be if he were elected to Congress again, you know. And so Marco Rubio, I always kind of got that sense from him a little bit. You know?
I mean, the ones that were Tea Party candidates were few and far between that were actually for, like, you know, small governments. I mean, Mike Lee is a good one. He's a Tea Party guy.
Tom McClintock from California.
Rand Paul, of course.
Are we only talking senators here?
I'm just off the top of my head, whichever ones. Justin Amash.
Yeah.
I mean, these people that actually went through but most of them were just like, I'm for the Tea Party. All right, let's get back to business as usual.
I've heard Jeff Flake's name a lot associated with Ron Paul. Do you guys know anything about Jeff Flake? What's he like?
I don't
does
even.
Does he like?
No?
Does he...
Don't know? All right. He's from Arizona.
Okay.
And I've heard that he's sort of like in the Justin Amash mold. So maybe if you could email us and let us know that.
There's a few that Young Americans for Liberty PAC has.
I saw some endorsements yesterday. I cannot remember his name, but I just saw someone yesterday that's a Young Americans for Liberty candidate running for Congress.
Y'all PAC.
Well, yeah, Y'all PAC endorsed.
Right.
Candidate.
Because there are two separate entities, right? There's the Young Americans for Liberty, which is nonpartisan and does not take a stance, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the Y'all PAC, which supports candidates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, God bless America. The FEC, limiting your free speech every single day. So,
don't talk about candidates unless you put a PAC after your name.
So, yeah, I heard you guys had a bit of a run-in. Do you want to talk about that at all on campus?
How much time do we have? We could save it till next week.
We've got about... Seven minutes. Let's just cut that out.
We'll allude to it so we can keep you guys on the edge of your seats.
IUPUI
sucks.
we won't actually be here next week.
Our school is really limiting our political free speech on campus. And we're gonna do something about it.
I haven't told you guys this yet, but I will be at the national convention next week, so we won't have an episode next week.
Call out to all libertarians. We should have an Avengers midnight showing party.
All right.
Go see Avengers at the same theater on Thursday night at midnight.
Thursday night. Next Thursday night at midnight? Okay.
Next Thursday night at midnight, Avengers comes out.
All right, that sounds good. I won't be able to be there because I'll be in Las Vegas for the National Libertarian Convention. But if you guys, we'll publicize, if you're a regular listener and you want to hang out and watch the Avengers movie next week, then any idea what theater you might pick?
No idea. It depends on who wants to go.
Okay. So get in touch with us on the Facebook page. You can get there directly by wearelibertarians.com. Galt will take care of that, post all the information on when and where. So get in touch with him, and we'll have an Avengers preview next Thursday night. So in lieu of an episode next week, we'll have that little event. So
yeah. Sounds great.
All right. Cool. Is there anything else coming up?
Well, finals are this week at school, so we had our last meeting for the semester.
Yeah, in our official capacity, not much is happening. We plan on doing some stuff during the summer.
We're gonna have an end of the school year IUPUI YL party.
I'm also working on an end of the year report that's gonna be like a big, you know, nice summary and
it'll be nice
fancy stuff of what we did all year. So
brag
you guys
about
can
us.
Read that and see what we actually did rather than us just talking about it. But
talking's fun.
Is there anything going on in the LP?
There's no events really because it's sort of like finals week. Next week is the national convention, so everybody travels out to Las Vegas to elect our presidential candidate, to elect our next chair for the party.
To get hammered and fall asleep.
To get hammered and, right, yes. Wake up with a face tattoo and Mike Tyson.
Tiger in the car.
Right. Like, this is my tiger. So I may or may not come back with some good stories the Thursday after.
What happens
so.
In Vegas stays in Vegas. And
right.
Remember to do, STDs, keep listening at the end of the show for Chard Reed's great
yes.
answer.
I will say, even though there are no events debate. Coming up, please go to podcast.lpin.org. That's the site that we publish all of our podcasts on. You can not only get the feed to this, but you can also get the master feed for the LPIN the party. We post raw audio from our conventions, from candidates. You can listen to the full debate with Chard Reed the other night. We publish these podcasts there, interviews with all kinds of leaders in the Libertarian Party of Indiana. And also we have Rupert's new weekly podcast up there too. So, and there's also a training center podcast. So if you want some additional training on how to be a good activist for Ron Paul's campaign or for libertarian campaigns or for whatever Galt likes this week, well, then
also, I'm actually starting my own business, Amplify Audio Technologies. We're going to run sound for political campaigns and events. So if you have a party coming up at the primary next week or whatever, give us an email. It's info@amplifyindy.com is our email address. And if you email me the promo code podcast, I'll give you 10% off.
Cool.
So
yeah, it's really important. There's a huge need for that because nonprofits and political organizations and campaigns, there's like two sound companies in town and they're ridiculously expensive because they do the sound for everybody. So that just a lot of times doesn't meet the budget for, you know, nonprofits and political campaigns and small businesses. So make sure you get in touch with Galt. Give us that website or that Facebook page again. How do they get in contact with you?
The Facebook link is not completed yet, but the contact info is info@amplifyindy.com.
Okay.
AMPLIFYINDY.
Might have gone with an easier business name. Dang.
Amplify is not
QRSTUV.
All right. So, again, we'll be off next week, and on Thursday we'll put something in the feed just so you're not lonely next week. And then when we come back the following Thursday, we'll have the results of the Indiana primary. We'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll also talk about the LP National Convention and whatever
Sounds
else.
Like we'll talk about some of our school issues as
School issues, too. So make sure you tune in 2 weeks. It's going to be a doozy. All right.
Exciting.
Hold on.
All right, so I forgot the music, so let's go out on the music here.
Why don't we go out with Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson. If you haven't heard Mel Gibson's epic new rant, I played it for Creighton and Chris before they got here. Hooray! The best.
Eat some food!
He's crazy.
Who wants to eat? Who wants to eat? Hooray! So, all right, well, you guys take care. You guys have a great week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
That simple world of my own. Nobody but you.
I think it's really important to understand that the federal government only exists because the states agreed to give it limited power through the Constitution. In their wisdom, our founding fathers only gave 17 specific powers to the federal government, and in the 10th Amendment clearly stated, all other powers are reserved to the states and to the people. In essence, the 10th Amendment is a leash on the federal government. And you guys know, a leash is only as good as the person holding it. Imagine if you had a pit bull across the street from you and a bodybuilder holding it. You'd feel pretty safe, right? But imagine there's a 3-year-old girl holding that pit bull by the leash. You're not going to feel so safe because the leash is only as good as the person holding it. And for the past 100 years, both the Republicans and the Democrats alike have proven that they are altogether unworthy of holding the leash that keeps our government in check. It's time for us to send a new leader to Washington who's serious about taking a stand for liberty. And tonight, you're going to see that I'm completely different than these gentlemen. To use an analogy, these six gentlemen are like six different brands of vanilla cookies. They may have different packaging, they may have a different marketing strategy, but the truth is, they're all made with the six same basic ingredients, and they've all been made in the same factory. And here's the sad truth. Every one of them is going to leave the same taste in your mouth 2 years from now. Disappointment, because you thought things were going to be different. Look,
If you're satisfied with the way the government is currently being run, then one of these men is your man. But if you want to restructure the size and the scope of the federal government and reassert our natural rights of life, liberty, and property, then I'm the man for the job. I'm Chard Reed, and a vote for me in November, I'm not in the primary, is a vote to keep government out of your life, out of your faith, and out of your checkbook.
This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.